Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brett Gunning. Game one, Leafs Bruins tomorrow from Boston. Some emotional players on this Leafs team.
Mm-hmm.
This edition of the Toronto Maple Leafs, which is like we view as a good thing.
Yeah,
right?
maybe it'll make me emotional in a good way.
Game one's, I mean, the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's just a chef's kiss. It is the best round of the Stanley Cup playoffs because everybody starts healthy.
Yep.
By the time you get to the cup final, it's the walking wounded.
Yeah, but it's like a bunch of warriors on the ice.
That's right.
So don't you dare denigrate it.
Yeah. But game one, I mean, it's part of the reason. Again, we talked about Ryan Reeves in a Panthers series and why I think we might see Ryan Reeves tonight, even if it, you know, isn't the optimal lineup, which I think it probably is anyways.
I think so.
There's going to be a physical tone set.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a tone set by the officiating as well.
Mm.
So we've seen some Toronto Maple Leafs players who are emotional.
Oh, yeah, we have.
Play their way out of this city because they didn't understand where the line was.
Yep. And then they got to a new city and they still didn't know where the line was.
Right.
And then they won a cup.
Yeah. And Michael Bunting was also...
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Right, but then he did return, and like, okay, it's a different scenario than Nazem Kadri twice.
Well, and again, like, where would they be if Michael Bunting didn't knock Cernak out of the series?
Yeah. Anyways, yeah, going back to the 2019 of it all, yeah, Nazem Kadri. Like, how much on your radar will that be of, hey, Tyler Bertuzzi, Max Domi, Joel Edmondson, Ryan Reeves, lesser extent, Bobby McMahon?
Yeah.
Yeah, do your thing where, like, or Jake McCabe, I think, needs to be thrown in there.
Joel Edmondson?
I said Joel Edmondson, if you were listening.
Okay. I was clearing my throat.
So. Simon Benoit.
Yeah.
Like, how much on your radar is the, hey, do the thing where, yeah, you have to set the physical tone.
Yep.
But don't be like Kyle Clifford.
Right. God, that was the worst one. It was just like sob numbers. It was like, what if I put him clean through the stadium? God.
And especially considering the penalty kill that the Maple Leafs employ, how much is that going to be on your radar?
I don't need to see an egregious act of violence tonight. I wouldn't be like overly mad if it happened. Tomorrow night. Wouldn't be overly mad if it happened, but I don't think that's what setting the tone is about.
You don't want to see, like, the second last Bruins game where Jake McCabe was like, hey, I don't care. Like, here's my cross check.
No, I don't think you need that. But what I do want to see, and yeah, it's about those guys, but it's about what they can do to the other guys. Auston Matthews is not going to go charging into a scrum. But could he, like, can he look someone in the eye? John Tavares, same exact thing. Like, be a part of this. I just want to see a bunch of bleep you fests in front of the net. I don't want guys skating away haphazardly. And, like, I don't expect that from all the guys you listed. But it's about the effect they can, and boy, how many times have you heard this before? It's about the effect they can potentially have. And unlike in years past, it's not been some guy down the lineup with Matthews or down the lineup that's supposed to make Auston Matthews feel that way. No, it's the two guys riding shotgun with them that are going to provide that kind of life and energy. So I don't think it's about, you know, a massive hit or anything like that, but it is about setting a tone that you are not going to back down. It's not about bringing it to Boston. It's about a lack of back down for me.
I think it's also important to tell the officials that, hey, we're going to be...
We're allowed.
Yep. Okay. So maybe call some penalties early. You can't call them all.
Yep.
Okay. You can't call them all. And by the end of the series... When we get to game seven, you're not going to call the things that you're calling in game one.
Ask Matthew Tkachuk.
Well, we're going to do the same things, okay? So you have to, like, it's NHL officiating, and it's the playoffs, and we've seen this work against the Maple Leafs, against this very Bruins team. Yep. So, yeah, you got to, even if it results in you taking some penalties, you got to let the officials know that that's the way it's going to go down. All right, time now for our Insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online. And in the showroom, visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. It is Josh Cloak, the Athletic Leafs reporter from Boston. How's it going, Josh?
Not bad at all. Staring out at the ocean, kind of contemplating my seafood lunch.
Oh.
That's lobster where my roll? Head is at. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right.
Lobster roll might... That might break the budget for the day. That's kind of an end of series treat.
Mm.
You know, it could be a long series. You gotta pace yourself.
That's good. Okay. We know Luke Fox was not prepared to go from the state of Florida to the state of Massachusetts Where's your level of preparation? Are you properly clothed for this series?
Did you bring pants is what we're asking.
Look, I love the Fox dearly, but I was so disappointed in him. Like, that's a rookie move. Fox is a dad. Fox knows you have to be prepared for multiple scenarios. And I was really worried about him. I was ready to kind of give him my jacket, give him my sweater, like really help him out. No, listen, I packed for both. So like I'm lacking in like, I've got my sweaters, but I don't have a lot of them because there was space also taken up by flip-flops, you know, and shorts. So, I'm very thankful my hotel has a coin-operated laundry, because it's, yeah, it's strange though. It was genuinely strange, like kind of coming into those last 2 days of the regular season. And, you know, you've got friends and family kind of saying like, where are you going to be? And I'm like, I don't know. And I don't think the Leafs knew either. And I think that's really added to kind of the drama and suspense of this series, because there hasn't been as much buildup for Leafs Bruins as there, you know, has been in past seasons. But we're here now, and like, what, it's got to be at the top of the most anticipated first round series this year, don't you think?
Yeah, I think you
now
can.
Now that there's no Oilers Golden Knights.
Yeah, that was the one I think everybody had circled. And again, like another last minute change. Do you think that benefits the Leafs that they haven't been sitting there? And again, you'd never get them to admit it of, oh, yeah, this is great that we haven't been sitting here worrying about Boston. But do you think it does help them that it's a bit of a kind of change of what they were expecting? Or do you think it benefits either team, or it's just kind of a weird quirk in the way we're headed into the series?
Yeah, I do actually think it benefits the Leafs that, you know, they didn't have, you know, an increased number of media coming to them in the final few days of the regular season and asking them about, you know, ghosts and exercising demons and the Bruins and all that. I think it's a genuine benefit to the team to start this series on the road, right? And they made a conscious effort not to come home, even though they had a day off yesterday, and I suppose they could have flown home. You know, I think they're relishing the opportunity to be underdogs. They haven't been in most of their past few playoff series, and we know how that's gone. I think it's been an opportunity for the team to kind of hunker down. But also not get overwhelmed by questions about, you know, the Bruins and what went wrong in the past. You know, like I think about a guy like Mitch Marner, who's going to wear, you know, any success or failure really, really heavily, you know, and the fact that he didn't, you know, he wasn't asked about that by, again, an increased number of media over the past few days. I think that could be good for the team. That's where I stand. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
Yeah, I think in the first media availability you've got before the series this afternoon, maybe some of those questions arise. But you're right, it's not like 2 weeks of it; it's a day. But yeah, we will see them practice for the first time, first and only time, before tomorrow's game one today. What's the biggest question you have about how Sheldon Keefe is going to align his players this afternoon?
Well, I think there's probably two questions for me. First of all, what does the top six actually look like? Like, it's kind of come down, I think, to, is it TJ Brody or Timothy Liljegren that's in? I think Ilya Lyubushkin gets in, and I think Simone Benoit gets in. And so then you're kind of down, I think Joel Edmondson gets in as well. So then you're kind of down to that last right D, you know, player. And I think it's going to be Liljegren, if only because I don't know who else really runs PP2 that well. But then the big question for me besides that is, you know, the player we just talked about briefly, like, is Mitch Marner going to get back on Austin Matthews' wing? It's felt, I think, inevitable in some ways, but is it a matter of, you know, Sheldon Keefe going to that if the Leafs go down 2-1 in a series, or if they need some offense in, you know, game 3 or 4 or whatever? Or does he like the idea of spreading out the offense a little bit more and forcing William Nylander down to the third line? I think we've seen a more of a frustrated William Nylander over the past few games than, I don't know, maybe we've ever seen. Like, frustration and William Nylander don't go hand in hand. So I wonder if that's something Sheldon Keefe has sensed, and he wants to move him up and just have, you know, two top-heavy lines. We'll see. That's a big one for me, like, because it has always felt like an inevitability that Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner would play together in the playoffs. But, you know, in doing that, you might hurt Max Domi, who's played really, really well. So a lot of dominoes to fall around 1:30 today.
Yeah, the way I look at it, and I wouldn't be shocked one way or another, you're right, because it's like it is the safest combination that he has consistently gone to throughout his Leafs tenure has been Marner and Matthews together. But I just look at it as, and you know, I was having the same thoughts when you were mentioning William Nylander there. It's like, I agree with you. I think the best thing for William Nylander is for him to be in the top six, but I think the best thing for the Toronto Maple Leafs is for William Nylander to be on your third line. I also think it's easier to go with Marner and Matthews as a reactive thing if game one or the first two games don't go the way you want. How much do you think starting on the road factors into his decision with that as well? Like, I think that's another wrinkle we all should be thinking about with this, that it's entirely possible that he has one lineup in mind for games one and two, and I don't think the players will change. I just think their places will for the games three and four at home.
I think Sheldon Keefe has multiple lineups planned. And, like, that's something that, you know, really helps the team at times, and I think you could argue that that's a hindrance at times, that, you know, it's not unlikely that we see three different lineups in games 1, 2, 3. Like, that's become a hallmark of Sheldon Keefe's tenure here with the Leafs, is that he likes to move things around, he likes to shake things up with his lineup, you know, sometimes in game. I do think starting on the road kind of forces you to kind of play the Bruins and how they want their matchups. I guess the big question, too, that I have now that we're deep in the lineup discussion is, like, if you keep William Nylander down there on the third line, are you making the best use of him with Pontus Holmberg as your center? Like, I think Pontus Holmberg is going to be a good third-line center, a really good third-line center somewhere down the road. But, like, you know, Willie needs a little more offense beside him, too. And I don't know. And then if you put, you know, Matthews with Marner, like, does that force Max Domi back to third line center? That's not where he's been at his most effective this season. And I do think all of these things are going to come into play. Like, it really wouldn't surprise me if we're talking about two different lineups from the start of game one till the end of game one. That's just what Sheldon Keefe does, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's his deal. The Nylander of it all, I mean, the way he finished the season, now wasn't playing on the third line for the last couple, at least when Max Domi was out, it was Mitch Marner back up alongside Austin Matthews, and Nylander was playing alongside John Tavares, but the way he finished the season wasn't ideal. I mean, the way the Leafs played down the stretch, the regular season, not ideal. Do you think there's any carryover to that, or is it just like, hey, that's over, we're moving on, that we can't take anything away, and we certainly hope that none of the goaltending stuff carries over, because it's a totally new world starting tomorrow?
It's hard to flip the switch, just in life. Like, you really can't, I don't know about you guys, can you really just wake up one day after four really bad days at work and say, oh, today's going to be fine, today's different.
Still
right?
Waiting for
stuff,
that day.
Stuff carries over. And the Leafs just, like, you know, and Sheldon Keefe was, you know, quite honest after the game in Tampa, and he said, I couldn't tell you the score of any of those four games, which, you know, could be deflecting pressure, but, you know.
Are we sure that's honest? We're sure?
Well, he also admitted to watching or pre-scouting the Bruins during the intermission of those of that game against the Lightning. Like, I don't know. I think there has to be some carryover, because they've, like, the goaltending hasn't been where they want it to be defensively. I mean, sloppy is probably putting it politely. And you can't just flip a switch, especially when you're going to be putting guys into the lineup who haven't played in some time either. Like, I expect Cali Yarncroc to play. I expect Max Domi to play. I don't know about Bobby McMahon. That one doesn't feel like as likely to me, but I expect those two players to play. So you're also asking your guys to develop some synergy with players who they haven't played with in a while. So all of this is to say, I think those four games matter, and I think flipping the switch is going to be a lot harder to do than, you know, I think a lot of people think it might be.
Yeah, and man, if McMahon can't go, like, you know, I know it's Bobby McMahon who's kind of found money this year, but it does change the complexion of that second line and what you want it to look like. You know, you mentioned Domi at center there, kind of looking at Boston. How much does their lack of center depth, and I know it's a classic, like you're overlooking them and one of those guys is going to have four goals in the series, but how much does their lack of elite center depth make it more palatable to play Domi at center? And just to let you know where I stand on that, I think he should be firmly on Auston Matthews' wing with Bertuzzi because I've liked it so much, but I would be maybe more open to it just because of what he'd be up against. This isn't, you know, the monsters that he's been facing in like a Barkov or if it was Florida or somebody like that.
Yeah, I think the reason Max Domi has worked so well on the wing is he's been allowed to really lean into his strengths, which is just like a natural playmaker, right? I don't think playing Max Domi in third line center really helps you out defensively. And we know that the games tighten up in the playoffs, right? That goes without saying. And that's why, you know, that's a pro in terms of, you know, playing Pontus Holmberg, because he is kind of defensively responsible. You know, David Camp hasn't had his best season, but you can count on him defensively. You can count on him to do that dirty work. And things just really change when you have a center like Max Domi, whose, you know, best strengths are not his defensive work. And I think that's I think that's a real concern for Sheldon Keith, because he doesn't want to get outworked defensively. He knows that, like, just, again, defensively, he's lost some juice this year. Right? The team is not as solid defensively as they were last season. I think he knows that. So to double down on that and put Max Domi at center, I don't know if that's a risk he's willing to take. I could be wrong. That's my read on it right now. And I think that's why there was such a concerted effort late in the season to get Max Domi on the wing, get Tyler Bertuzzi there as well. Because I just think what we saw earlier in the season was, you know, just defensive miscues exposed time and time again. And you can make up for that because what Max Domi has shown offensively has been really beneficial to the Leafs. Like, this is a player that was fifth in the NHL at 5-on-5 assists. This was a player that, if you're going, you know, 5-on-5 assists per 60 minutes, he was second only to Connor McDavid this year, right? He gives you a lot in kind of limited ice time offensively. And I think that's something Keith is really going to lean on.
Okay, goaltending seems pretty clear that the Bruins have the advantage in this series, no matter how they deploy their goalies, and it does feel like they're going to alternate, which is weird when it comes to the postseason, but it's what they've done all season long. Ilya Samsonov is going to get the start tomorrow in Game 1. He was not very good down the stretch, but neither was Joseph Woll. I just wonder where your head's at as far as the leash, because I go back to Game 1 against the Lightning last year where Ilya Samsonov did not finish that game. He gave up 6 goals in the first 40 minutes, and Joe Woll cleaned it up in a 7-3 loss, and then they bounced back and, of course, won the series, and he was a big reason why. I wonder, like, if you play it out that way tomorrow and the Leafs lose Game 1 of the series, which, I mean, we just have to go to recent memory and say that that's not a death knell because they just won a series after doing that. But, like, if the same scenario plays itself out, is Joe Woll not starting Game 2 for this Leafs team?
This is very inside baseball, but, you know, last night I was out at dinner with a bunch of writers, and we were all kind of going around the table sharing our, you know, biggest questions, biggest storylines. We were also researching where, you know, in Boston to get Luke Fox a jacket.
Yep. Got him.
But, you know, it came around to me, and I said goaltending as well, and I firmly believe that if Ilya Samsonov does have a bad game, his leash then is one more game, right? I think with Samsonov, they've made a concerted effort since he came back from everything that happened with him, you know, in December. They've made an effort to try and build him back up. And I think, that, you know, it's conceivable that if the Leafs go on a, let's just say a 2-round run, you're going to need both goalies and you're going to need them kind of back and forth. I don't think we're in a scenario here where, you know, if Joseph Woll steals the net, it's his for good, right? I really do think that they could be entering Bruins-ish territory where they have to go back, you know, back and forth between goalies. So again, in this scenario, if you lose or if you pull or if Ilya Samsonov has a bad game in Game 1 and you immediately go to Joseph Woll, I think, given what Ilya Samsonov has gone through this year mentally, I think you run the risk of losing him for good if you don't try and give him the net again, if that makes sense. Like, I really think if he has a bad game in Game 1, and that's a big if, we haven't seen him in a week, you know, we haven't seen him play in a week, I think he gets Game 2. right? Now, the kind of the flip side of that is what happens if his bad game is game five?
Yeah.
Like, you know, that game one and game five are different points, right? So I think he gets another game because I think if you don't go back to him, you lose him for good.
Really weird to have two goaltending situations with both teams that are not all that clear. Josh, can't wait for this thing to kick off tomorrow. Well done packing for all scenarios. Thanks for doing this, man.
Appreciate it. Anytime, boys.
Josh Cloak, the Athletic Leafs reporter. He was our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com.
When he started chuckling before you even asked the question, you were just like, Luke Fox is a man. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, they've all been talking about this, eh?
Yeah.
Either that or he's just a fan of the show. Yeah. I'm not ruling out either possibility. Man, this will shock you. Just quick little travelogue for me. Boston, great city. I've actually been there. But there's a reason. Like, Fenway Park exists. So I went there to watch it, you know, at a good ballpark.
Been to Fenway.
Yeah.
I was there the 100-year anniversary of Fenway Park. I saw Ted Williams. Anyways.
Congrats.
Thank you. Greatest hitter in history of baseball.
No. Yeah. Awesome fighter pilot, too. I've heard. I feel like they could tell me anything about that, and I'd believe it.
And also, if you're a Boston sports hater, which I guess you weren't because you're a Red Sox fan at the time, but like if you're he also hated Boston sports.
He did. He hated them.
Anyways, to the Samsonov thing, let me ask you the same question. Because, again, played out where Samsonov was god awful.
Mm-hmm.
And the Leafs were god awful in game one against the Lightning.
Yeah.
He was yanked.
Yes.
After 40 minutes, after allowing six goals, got the start in game two. Games two through six had a save percentage of .919,
mm-hmm.
including some crucial saves
in
overtimes, and none better than game six, where he only allowed one goal against in a victory over the Tampa Bay Lightning. So same thing happens.
Yep.
And it's not like Joe Wall's there. He's had, like, this incredible finish to the season either.
Mm-hmm. No.
What are you doing for game two?
You know what? When he first uttered the answer to that question, I think I actually physically winced because that sounded like such a bad idea. The more I think about it, though, I think he's right, especially with both games being in Boston. Let's play out the worst doomsday scenario of that. Samsonov gets pulled in the first game and you go to Joe Wall and you say, all right, you know what, Sammy, we trust you. We're going back to you. And he gets shelled again. He's done. But you lost two games in Boston that you could have possibly, and there's no guarantee that Wall was going to come in there. So I do like the idea of giving him a second crack. He's right about game five being a completely different scenario. I thought he was nuts when he first said it. But the more I think about it, with it being in Boston, these games are at home. It's a very, very different equation for me. But with it being in Boston, if it is he can't find the puck, then I think you don't go back to him. But if it is your standard bad game, whatever that means to you, then I think it does make sense to go back to him, which I would not have thought. Again, I did not think it a minute and a half ago when Josh was telling us this.
I think you go to Joe Wall for game two. And sorry, if you end up losing Ilya Samsonov for the rest of the series. Yeah, if that's what it's... Listen, if you have to go back to Ilya Samsonov after going to Joe Wall in game two, the series is over anyways. Because you've lost twice and then you have, like, no confidence in either goaltender.
It is weird,
you're
though.
You're ruined forever.
It's weird that I feel like a bad Samsonov game begets the start of a trend in more bad Samsonov games. But if everything that... And I'm not saying it. I'm just going off what everybody has said is true about Joe Wall. I don't think him having a bad game begets another bad game. Like, I think it's more likely that you lose Samsonov than you completely lose Wall.
Yeah, and I know, again, recent history would tell you that you're not going to lose him after one bad game. But this is a different Ilya Samsonov after what he's gone through this season.
Man. What's on the line.
Yeah, and the pending free agency, like all of that. I think you get one kick of the can with him. And, to your point, like if Joe Wall is bad in game two, whatever. He's your starter for the rest of the series anyways. Because then at least, God, what a nightmare scenario. But, like, at least then you're like, well, what do we have here going into next season?
Yep. playing for next year. It's like a team playing out the string in September. You got to see what you got.
Yeah, what do we got here? What do we got in Timothy Liljegren, who's a restricted free agent? What do we got here in Joe Wall?
Timothy Liljegren, PP1. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, you're not experimenting in playoff games, but, there's no guarantees either way. No, Ilya Samsonov gets one game for me. Stinks. Thanks.
But no thanks. Goodbye forever.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah. Anyways. Ooh, lots on the line, it feels like, for lots of people individually.
All of a sudden, it got very tense in here.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, man who knows that feeling. Former Leafs defenseman Jake Gardner, who was on the ice last time the Leafs played the Bruins in a postseason series in 2019. He joins us next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Annis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective, Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Ben Annis, Brent Gunning. Time, it just, you can't stop it.
It's true.
It goes
sands
by.
Of time.
Yeah. Like sand through the hourglass. Yeah. These are the days of our lives.
Whoa. Look at you.
2019 was a long time ago. Okay, people?
Some might even say like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. I mean, that would, I mean, if you want to get into like the
tactical
nuts and bolts of it. Yeah.
Austin really Matthews. Splitting the atom coming up with that one.
Austin Matthews was in year three of his existence. Again, like go through the box scores from those games in that series and the one that preceded it in 2018 and the guy that was standing on the bench and even the guys that are carried over into this series against the Bruins. Again, like how different is Austin Matthews today? A guy who already has a Hart Trophy under his belt, a guy who's going to get Selke votes this season after scoring 69 goals. And, I mean, I guess if we're going to do that, like, how different is John Tavares today than the guy that played in 2019? I'm sorry. The ghost stuff, it's you just miss me with that.
Well, the ghosts are real for all of us talking about it and the people who care. But I don't think it's real for the players. You're right. Like, you're right to point this out. Austin Matthews, that year, now he only played 68 games, he had 37 goals. It's like, think about the player he is now. Mm-hmm. He does that in a week, seemingly, at times.
All right, let's talk to a man who was on that 2019 Leafs team. Former Leafs defenseman, Jake Gardner, kind enough to join us this morning. How's it going, Jake? Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, you bet. How you guys doing?
Doing well, man. What have you been up to these days?
Well, I have 3 kids now, so that's taking up a lot of my time.
All of it, yeah.
And recently just got a new job. Working on a place called Camber Road. So that'll be exciting. Actually, my territory is going to be Toronto, so I'll be up there quite a bit.
Hold on, but doing what? What is this new job?
It's so basically we lease equipment to venture-backed companies, mainly early-stage, fast-growing companies that are backed by venture capital. So be an exciting new challenge for me, and like I said, I'll be in Toronto, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, that seems like an obvious benefit to you working in your former territory, now becoming your present territory. You can slap on the old Leafs jersey while you're going around selling your wares here in Toronto.
Let me just FaceTime 34 here before I get to you. Yeah, that might help, Jake.
Yeah, that might help a little bit. Yeah, I think it might. get some signed merch. I don't know. We'll see.
Smart move.
Yeah.
Great move.
All right. Speaking of 34, well, let's go back to that 2019 postseason series and what Austin Matthews was then and what you've seen from him now. Again, like as a Hart Trophy in between, he scored 60 goals, which we thought was cool, but like we didn't know he would almost score 70 in proceeding years. How different a player do you think Austin Matthews is now than he was in 2019?
I mean, I just watched the game the other night. He was a man amongst boys. It was impressive. I mean, he was, it seemed like he was possessed to get that. And his teammates were too, which was, I thought was even cooler. Just watching the support that those guys gave him, trying to get him the 70th, playing in that final game. I thought that was awesome. But yes, he has come a long way. Not that he was a great player before, but he's a machine right now. So it's fun to watch, and I can't wait to watch him in the playoffs.
I mean, you're part of some good Leafs teams. You play with some great Leaf players, but like, can you even fathom what it would have been like to play on a team with a guy chasing not 50, not 60, but 70 goals? I mean, we've heard Domi, he's been the guy kind of most talking about it, about how much of a team accomplishment it would be. There's been a lot of talk about if that's a bit of a momentum suck or how much of a gut punch it would be. Like, how do you think the guys in the room are feeling that they, and you know, no one's feeling guilty about it, but that they weren't able to get 70 for him?
No, I mean, it was a team effort. I think it's it says a lot about the Leafs and his teammates, and I think he knows that too. Obviously, he is a very special talent, but it's not just one guy, and they got darn close. It's pretty cool still. Mm.
So I just said that, you know, 2024 is a long time from 2019. 2019 was a long time from 2013. But, yeah, did you guys – I mean, that was so much the discussion around those Bruins series. Like, how much did it actually factually enter the equation that this was the team at which, you know, a 4-1 third period Game 7 lead was blown to?
Yeah, I mean, that certainly enters your mind for sure. Not typically, you know, I'd say the Leafs probably don't necessarily want to play Boston, just based on the history. But I do think it's two great teams. Anybody could win. You know, you look back at those games and a few bounces here, a few bounces there, and, you know, suddenly we're up 6-1 instead of 4-1. But that's just not how it went. So that's hockey. That's sports. That's why it's such a great game, and you know, it just didn't go our way then. Hopefully the script is flipped this time.
Oh boy. Yeah. As you said, 5-1, 6-1. Yeah. There are a couple moments in particular I'm thinking about. I wasn't invested as you. God, I cared a lot, Jake. Yeah. It was a tough one, and you see the bounces go that way. You know, a big thing that's been talked about in all of these series with the Leafs and the Bruins, and it's going to be a big topic this year, is the physicality. Like, it has been a big point of emphasis this year for the Leafs to go out and get a little meaner, get a little nastier. How much is that a part of it? When, I mean, let's be honest, it's a team like Boston. Like, they want to get in your face. They want to ride Marchand's momentum and energy. How much do you think it'll help the Leafs to kind of have a little bit more of that this time around of guys? And, you know, it goes all the way from like a fourth line guy like Ryan Reeves to somebody who's playing alongside Matthews now in a Bertuzzi or a Domi.
Yeah, I think both are important. I think, you know, having Reeves, nobody wants to mess with that guy. And then, yeah, having Domi and Bertuzzi, I think just the team toughness has gotten, you know, a lot tougher, even on the back end too. Edmondson and McCabe, I think those were both good adds. And so, yeah, it's more of a team toughness than just one guy. I think they did a good job of that. Those guys can all still play. And like I said, it should be a great series. It should be, you know, very physical, especially in the first couple games.
Well, what's it like to play against Brad Marchand, like in the moment and in these big series? And yeah, his attempts to get you off your game and understanding the ultimate goal is to not end up in the penalty box, but like, you're only human. I mean, what is that like?
I mean, he's annoying to play against. He's a gamer, that's for sure. He seems like he thrives while he's trying to really get under someone's skin. So the more you can kind of ignore it and don't get him fired up, I think the better. But, yeah, I mean, that'd be my advice.
Yeah, if we're going to talk about Leafs playoff past, I mean, there's so many inflection points. One of them on one of the teams you played on is Nazem Kadri, Jake DeBrusk. I mean, if we're going to sit here and talk about team toughness, God, Kadri looked pretty tough then, but obviously it hurts you guys not having him for the rest of the series. Like, how hard do you think it is for players? And, you know, I don't want to say you played the game without emotion. Obviously you did, but Kadri was a kind of a different level, and the Leafs have a few of those guys now. How hard do you think it is for those guys to kind of walk that line? And, I mean, look on the other side of things, Marchand's been the guy who's, well, I honestly think sometimes he crosses over the line, the league lets him get away with it, but he seems to find that line as well. Like, how important is it for players like that to look, you want to stick up for your teammates, you want to set a tone, but obviously you can't get yourself booted out of a series as well?
Right. Yeah, that was unfortunate. I don't, you know, looking back at that, I don't think he was, obviously wasn't trying to, you know, get suspended or do anything too malicious. And just an unfortunate situation. It is tough to, you do get emotional, and at times, sometimes you cross the line, but it's, you know, it's just being smart at the right time.
So you were gone the next season when Mike Babcock was fired in the middle of the regular season, but did you have a sense by the end of that postseason that maybe his tenure in Toronto had run its course?
You know what? I was actually a little bit surprised. The media certainly thought that, which tends to happen. You know, someone grabs onto something and they kind of run with it. But I thought he was a great coach. You know, he did some questionable things, sure, but he knows what he's doing, that's for sure.
Want to get further into the questionable things? Like, we all heard the rumor about the Marner stuff, right? Like, that's pretty much now agreed upon that that's a thing. And, you know, Mitch has said, yeah, it wasn't great, and he apologized, and we got past it. Like, did you ever go through your phone?
We don't have to talk about that. You know, it's over and done with. I respect him a lot. He was great to me. He was a great coach. So that's all I say.
Is he there with you right now, Jake? It sounds like he's sitting right next to you.
maybe not. Hey, man, so you obviously you've spent a couple of years in Carolina as well. But yeah, your best season's remembered as a Toronto Maple Leaf. Is that where your rooting interests lie when you get set to watch the Stanley Cup playoffs?
It better be if you're selling equipment up here.
Yeah. Although, I don't know if Carolina's in your territory as well. Like, when you do Carolina radio this week, are you going to say it's obviously with the Canes?
Obviously love David Ayers. Yeah.
No, I'd love to see the Leafs win for sure. Still keep in touch with quite a few guys, and it's the coolest place to win, and it's probably the worst place to lose. So every time I see them get eliminated in the playoffs, I feel for them. I would love to see them win a Stanley Cup. I think that'd be the coolest thing in the world.
Well, and I think, you know, people you're talking about are talking to in your new line of work, they're, you know, maybe the purse strings open up a little bit more if they're celebrating a Stanley Cup victory, you know? Come on. Who's not?
That's true. You're right. Yeah. Yeah. Get it going, boys.
Yeah, it's good for business.
High
all the
tide
way
raises all boats, baby.
Jake, I appreciate the time today. Thanks so much for doing it.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
You too. There's Jake Gardner, former.
It was a go Leafs at the end. That was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. I thoroughly enjoyed that.
A likable fella, man. Like, obviously, polarizing guy at times.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of his tenure, not healthy.
Like, yes.
Pretty
very much so.
Clearly.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately for him, at the wrong time, especially considering his free agency.
But, well, and just a guy who, like, health, like, it's like, his game is so predicated on movement and quickness and being a great skater and all that. Yeah, brutal timing. He scored one of the nicest goals I've ever seen in person with my eyes. It was like a Marley's game. I don't even know what I was doing there. And he like spun to his back. He was like walking the blue line. He spun to his backhand. He like walked down to the net. He roofed it shelf. It was one of the most beautiful goals I've ever seen. And it's honestly every argument I ever had about Jake Gardner while he was playing here. Mm-hmm. It's like these little moments, they just stick in the back of your mind. I was like, but the goal was so nice. How can you say a bad thing about him?
It's unfortunate for him that he like had to play the Larry Murphy role. Like, it's always a defenseman, man. It's always a guy on the blue line who's, yeah, not a perfect player.
Yep.
But that is the meat shield for every defensive issue that plagues a Maple Leafs team.
I just thought about this because generally speaking, that guy has to be in the lineup and playing. Is there one right now?
I was going to ask you the same thing. Like, who? I was going to phrase it differently. But yeah, who is the guy that? I was going to say, who's the guy that gives you most anxiety when he's on the ice right now? And I guess it's kind of like a brother question to that.
It's Brad Marchand, just so we're clear.
Yeah, is there a guy who is wearing it? It's hard. Like, I mean, to me, it's going to be Ilya Samsonov.
Yes, that's the thing.
If that goes haywire, but it's not going to be Simon Benoit.
Anything he gives you has already found money this year.
I mean, maybe it's Ilya Labushkin, but we've seen him be a pretty good player for this Leafs team in the postseason. And also the expectation shouldn't be astronomical, but we did see proof of concept with Luke Shen last year. I think it might be whoever that sixth guy is, whether it's Timothy Liljegren or TJ Brody.
That's the one. Because Brody feels like that guy now, but he's, I think for a lot of us, and we'll find out, I guess, today at practice, he feels like not one of the six. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to be the Larry Murphy figure when it's like, yeah, Connor Timmins isn't the Larry Murphy figure. Sorry. And even with, I think, Liljegren, he's in that perfect realm where there are not, like, huge expectations on him, but we keep waiting for him. And again, it's just like, it's Sandin all over again. He just shoots with the right hand of, like, he's going to get better. He's going to make strides. And it's like, I was guilty as anyone of believing it was going to happen with Sandin. Mm-hmm. And we're just watching the same exact thing play out with Timothy Liljegren.
God, I mean, but the Liljegren thing is just so unfortunate because he started finding his game during the Riley suspension, right? And then he gets hurt down the stretch, too.
Yeah.
And he returned. For what? Did he play both games down the stretch? Anyways.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Meaningless games down the stretch during the regular season for this Leafs team. And we've seen him return to the lineup at different points when he's been injured and it be a slow burn for him to get back to to game strength. Now he's playing on a third pairing, we assume, if he's the guy over TJ Brody, which changes things. But
I think the one guy who has the expectations, but again, it's funny, like all the guys who you expect enough from to be the Larry Murphy figure, it's like Morgan Riley is kind of bulletproof because of what happened last year. It's not to say he can't be criticized, but it's not going to go full Larry Murphy for him, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And then Jake McCabe, because of his style of play, like Jake McCabe's not going to be pulling up going into the corner or something like that. And that's what you expect from him. I just think, and hey, like Leafs Nation, I know you can do it. Prove me wrong. But I really don't think with the way this group is constituted that there's the like built-in whipping boy on the blue line. If it's anybody, I think it's Liljegren. But what are we doing here? Is the 6D? Like you're gonna lose the series because your 6D was bad?
I'm on high alert for Jake McCabe because of... Yeah, it's great. The style he plays when it's going well and he's hitting people, banging bodies, and the shutdown pairing that's expected to be. But that's the shutdown pairing, right? Again, Simon Benoit, bulletproof.
Yeah.
Because he's found money.
Mm-hmm.
And then he signed on the dotted line for just over $1 million. And who doesn't love a good Simon Benoit?
Yep.
Now, Jake McCabe's cap hit is only slightly more than that.
Yeah.
But he's expected more of that pairing is hugely critical
to the
Maple Leafs' success being deployed against the Bruins' top line. And Jake McCabe, loved the hitting, loved the aggressiveness physically. We've seen him at times get away from
him. You think is like, what's going to do it.
We've seen him at times chase those hits, and it's resulted in odd man rushes the other way and goals in the back of the net. I mean, more than a few occasions last postseason where that's been the case.
Oh, damn you. Why'd you talk me into Jake McCabe being the Larry Murphy? But you're right. I think it's a very like specific instance where it's him going for the blow up hit like twice in a game and he gets beat and it's a 2-on-1 and then Benoit's like sprawling out and we go, oh, what is he supposed to do? There's no hope for him back there. Yeah, I think you did lay that out pretty well. I want to go back to something we actually talked about with Cloak. So Bobby McMahon, and again, like we'll find out today. But it seemed like, based on what Cloak was saying, that he is the least likely of the three of him, Domi, and Yarncroc to play in game one. If there is not Bobby McMahon on the left side of that second line, let's presume it's let's just live in a world where that's Marner and Tavares, and then you have Domi, Bertuzzi, and Matthews. Does that change where you put William Nylander? Does that further embolden you to load up your top six, or does it... Do you want to just stick with the status quo and then maybe you bump Yarncroc up one, you bump Nyes up one, and you have Dewar alongside Kampf and Revo?
I think the latter thing that you just described is what I would do because I want to see proof of concept for the first time, all four of these guys on three separate lines. Yeah. And I know the Nylander thing, he hasn't looked like the same dude when he's been forced onto a line centered by Pontus Holmberg, but... Yeah,
just to clarify, would you want Yarncroc or Nyes with Tavares and Marner?
I would put Yarncroc on the second line.
Okay.
And then I would put Nyes on the same line as Holmberg and Nylander. And then, Dewar gets into the lineup where I think he's going to be the odd man out here going into game one. Yeah, I know it hasn't gone well for Nylander down the stretch, right? Mm-hmm. He hasn't looked like the same dude. He's looked frustrated at times, too, which... Mm-hmm. Honestly, might be a good thing. Like, get some emotion out of that guy. Feel like he needs to prove something into the postseason, despite the fact that he's been the guy whose numbers have least dropped off in the postseason. I give me proof of concept here with three lines that are capable of scoring with superstar offensive players on all three of them against a Bruins team that doesn't exactly have the center depth that it's used to having.
Yeah, and you can. You can go back to loading it up. I think once you load it up, it's harder to go away from it because the guys are all happy and it's seen to be taking someone. Like, you have to. If Nylander starts on the left side with Marner and JT, and then you have your top line that's been the top line, if that doesn't work, then you have to demote William Nylander. Like, you have to, like, you can message it however you want. You say, oh, get the Swedish connection going with, like, you and Holmberg and Yarncroc. You can message it however you want. It's a demotion to the third line. Whereas if you start this way and you say, all right, it's not working here. All right, you guys, you got what you want. You're all going to play together. Go show me something. I think it's just easier to go about it that way. In terms of who gets the spot on the left side there, be it Yarncroc or Knies. I'm really torn. I do like the idea of Yarncroc being kind of that defensive conscious alongside Marner and Tavares, and then you do feel really safe mm-hmm. about that line. But I also worry about throwing that guy in that spot. Like, how long has it been he's played a
game? How long has it been since Bobby McMahon played, too, though, you know?
Well, Yarncroc has been out for forever.
Since March.
Yeah, so, and McMahon missed a couple of games here. Like, I think that Yarncroc, he is the most likely of a type of player that you could put in a spot and not worry about it. But, man, like, the idea the guy hasn't played a game in a month and change here, and you're just going to throw him on the second line game one of a playoff series in Boston against Brad Marchand, like, I don't know.
Yeah, the thing we haven't talked enough about, and it's because it feels like he's going to play tomorrow no matter what, is the fact that Max Domi is, in fact, injured.
Yes.
Like, hasn't practiced. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't just some load management thing. Yeah. Like,
which I was hoping it was when they first
He's dealing with something, which, man, if you're going to talk about a reason why you might reunite Marner and Matthews, that might be prime amongst them, is that, like, Max Domi doesn't look like the same dude because he's not 100%, you know. For a team that should have only prioritizing one thing down mm-hmm. the stretch of the regular season, yep. there's more than a few injury concerns with this team.
Yeah.
With not insignificant players.
So that'll be the excuse we lean on when they lose in the first round and we don't have a clear picture on what to do. Mm. Oh, God.
Yeah, if Domi doesn't look like the same guy that was among the league leaders in 5-on-5 assists during the regular season, and we don't see the immediate chemistry between he, Bertuzzi, and Austin Matthews, and it's not just, well, it's you got to give it time here mm-hmm. because it's been so good. I think, don't you think there's a part of Sheldon Keefe's brain sure. that might be, oh, this guy's not 100%, and why should I expect this to be as good as it's been? Because this guy's not physically the same guy that he was down the stretch of this regular season when he was healthy.
Yeah, and if Max Domi's not playing on the flank with Austin Matthews, what are you getting out of him? I'm not blind to the possibility that you put him at center in this series, given the I almost called him the Celtics for some reason, given the Bruins center depth there. But the best version of him has been a winger this year, all year long, and just throwing him again back into center when he hasn't played there in a long stretch of time, if he's coming off an injury, where's the fit for him if it's not beside Matthews? That was a question we had all season long. We might be back to it again.
We will see the line permutations. We will see who's in, who's out on that third pairing this afternoon mm-hmm. in Boston, and then we'll see him drop the puck for real as the real season gets underway tomorrow.
Can't
after
wait.
8 o'clock on Sportsnet and CBC Game 1. Leafs and Bruins. This has been the Fan Morning Show. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning.